You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. We've just heard the story of an Anglican priest in Fresno accused of sexually abusing some of his adult parishioners. The audio documentary was produced for the California Report magazine by KQED's Central Valley reporter, Alexandra Hall. I spoke with her about the reporting of this story.
How did you hear about this, and how long did it take you to report on it?
So last year around this time, I was covering a priest in the Central Valley who had been accused of sexual misconduct by several individuals. And at that time, there was a lot of media attention around priests within the Fresno, the Catholic Diocese of Fresno, and priests that had been placed on administrative leave because of allegations of sexual misconduct. I believe there were 8 or so priests that were on administrative leave. And so I was covering several allegations that had surfaced around a Bakersfield priest named Craig Harrison. And I was talking with sources with SNAP, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. And an individual with that organization and I were talking late one night when he expressed to me concern about, you know, whether or not SNAP was really doing enough to reach the Latino community in the Central Valley, immigrant communities here. You know, he was talking about how there aren't very many representatives of SNAP who are fluent in Spanish. And he just said that he was concerned that there might have been allegations or alleged abuse that they were missing. And so it was just started to be on my radar that this is a community that obviously is very active in the Catholic Church. And when you looked at a lot of the priests that were being placed on administrative leave in the Catholic Church here in the Central Valley, you can kind of see a pattern where obviously these are adults who are alleging abuse that they say occurred years, sometimes decades ago. But you hear a lot of the same stories where, you know, it's a rural community, a Latino teenager with immigrant parents, low-income household where a priest, you know, offers help, maybe financial assistance, maybe mentoring role in some of these families. And I started to pay more attention to this, to alleged priest sex abuse in this community in particular. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, at least I wasn't able to find very much reporting on that particular community with this topic. The advocate that I spoke with at SNAP told me about Antonio Castañeda's case, and he had been arrested in February 2019, and I was actually out of the country at the time, but when I got back, I started attending his court hearings. And it was very interesting going to these court hearings because, you know, this is Fresno Superior Court, and when you're in the pre-preliminary, you're in the stage of a criminal case where, you know, it's early on in the case. Castañeda was going there for pre-preliminary hearings. You know, a lot of it is about scheduling. And so the judge is hearing case after case, and the courtroom is pretty chaotic. There's defendants in custody, out of custody, people in the audience, public defenders, prosecutors, and the judge is just trying to go through as many cases as he or she can. And when Antonio Castañeda came up to speak to the judge, as soon as he was done and he was dismissed, about half of the courtroom at least got up and left. And I thought that that was so interesting, you know, that he,
wow, yeah.
even in these earlier hearings, he had this huge entourage with him of supporters who were so, you know, convinced that he's innocent and that he's been wrongly accused. And I started talking with his attorney, got in touch with one of his supporters, and she basically said, you know, come to Mass. We have nothing to hide. And I did. And, you know, the first Mass that I went to, one of his supporters basically set up a line of parishioners who were ready to answer my questions and talk on the record and vouch for him. And it was very, very compelling and made me even more intrigued to find out what had actually happened here. And then I ended up working on the story for over a year.
So that is fascinating because I wanted to ask you what kind of response you got from his supporters. I assumed that they would have been suspicious about you looking into the case, but it looks like it was just the opposite.
In the beginning, they were not suspicious of me. You know, when I first started going to Mass, you know, there were many parishioners who were very open about how they were, that they believed that Father Antonio had been wrongly accused and that, you know, this was their opportunity to set the record straight. You know, there were a lot of comments about, you know, jealousy, the people who have accused him are jealous, or, you know, there was even like we reported in the story, there was a protest, you know, where supporters were saying that the accusers are undocumented and, you know, they're trying to get a U visa, which is a visa you can get through cooperating with law enforcement and prosecuting a crime. And so that in the beginning, yes, his supporters were very friendly towards me. Every court hearing I went to, they were smiling and say hello to me and very open and cordial. That changed when at one hearing, there was a man who attended, who is the Archbishop for North America of the World Communion of Christian Celtic Convergence Churches, which is the organization that has taken Father Antonio into its fold now. That the Archbishop, Bruce Taylor, I recognized. And I said, you know, you're only in town for a few days, you know, let's sit down and have an interview. And I talked with him at great length. Our conversation ended in a little bit of a confrontation. And after that, that's when things changed a bit. And I was, you know, no longer able to go to Mass. And I talked to one of his supporters who said that, you know, Castaneda's attorney had advised him, advised them to stop communicating with me.
One of the things that was most striking to me was how candid and open your interview subjects were, particularly the alleged victims, about extremely sensitive subjects. How did you cultivate that level of trust?
Yeah, it took a long time. We actually, in the early stages of mapping out the structure of this story and meetings with my editors, discussed what is this story going to sound like with no alleged victims on tape. Because at that point, you know, I had interviewed Bishop Eric Moniz of the Anglican Diocese of San Joaquin. He passed along a request that I had written saying, I would really love to hear about your experience and learn more about, you know, what exactly happened at Our Lady of Guadalupe. And that request was respectfully declined, I was informed. And so I had to find other ways to get in touch with people. And it took, you know, Facebook messages, you know, over and over again, just trying to really earn people's trust, because some people thought that, actually a lot of people thought that I was working for Father Antonio and trying to deceive them in some way. So, you know, when I spoke with my editors, one of my editors, Sasha Coca, who's the host of the California Report magazine and previously was the Central Valley reporter for KQED here in Fresno, she, her advice to me was, you know, to let people have control of their own stories. So once I was able to get in touch directly with some of these alleged victims, it was a lot of late night conversations in people's living rooms with no recorder and explaining who I am and what I'm trying to do, what KQED is, what, you know, what is our objective with doing this story? What kind of questions are we trying to find the answers to? And, you know, what the reporting process would be like, because the goal was not to interview someone and then disappear and then one day they'll read their name in a news story. We have rigorous editorial processes involving fact-checking and legal review and giving Father Antonio and his defense attorney an opportunity to respond to everything that was in the story, which we did. So I checked in with people all of the time over the course of many months. And I think that that's what really helped, is that, you know, maybe in the beginning I could have been anybody, you know, I'm a stranger, but after we talked and we negotiated and I said, you know, nothing's going to go in this story without your permission, it was kind of just a trust building exercise that happened over the course of many months. And so I just continued to check in with people pretty frequently.
So obviously, Father Antonio did not go on the record with you for the story, but you obviously had interactions with him over the course of the, you know, more than a year that you were reporting. What were those interactions like?
Yeah, we did interact briefly several times, only in passing. In court, I saw him. He was very friendly, very cordial, always smiled and waved at me. In Mass, I believe it was the first Mass that I attended at his new church, Holy Spirit Church, where I had been there for hours. And I just wanted to thank him for accommodating me. And I walked over to him and introduced myself. And, you know, he was asking me about my job. And I just said, you know, thank you for having me. And he said, you know, your job isn't easy. And I said, no, it's not. I imagine yours isn't either. And I just thought it was interesting because, you know, I felt like I needed to hear that, which was interesting, just hearing all of these stories about him through other people who had worked so closely with him and just how much they felt that they had been manipulated. I felt like, you know, a lot of the parishioners' experiences working with Father Antonio started, you know, from a place of, you know, just feeling saved in a way and feeling, you know, this person really understands me and I'm okay with this person. And then having that change dramatically, you know, according to what they told us in these interviews. So I thought that that was an interesting window into his personality. And then, you know, as I was leaving, he just said, pray for me and I'll pray for you. And I said, okay.
Wow. So now that the story is out, what kind of feedback have you received?
The feedback so far has been positive. SNAP, the organization that the board member of SNAP who told me about this story, that organization released a statement about the story saying that the Diocese of Yakima, which is Castaneda's former employer, endangered the public by not being more clear with the Anglican Church about the reason why Father Antonio was dismissed from their diocese, and that the men that have made these allegations about Father Antonio here in Fresno would likely never have met him in the first place had officials in Yakima been more open and honest about why he was dismissed. They went on to talk about how allegations of abuse, that SNAP's position is that allegations of abuse or sexual harassment should be made to police first and church officials second, and that they hope that this story would inspire others to come forward. I did send the story to the Yakima Diocese, to the chancellor there, who said that they're working on ways to share the story appropriately with parishioners in their diocese in order to raise awareness. I have talked to several sources that we interviewed for this story, and one woman in particular said that she felt very good about it and that, in her words, the story really told the story, which I took to mean as, you know, portrayed their experience for what it really was. So that was nice to hear.
And then quickly before we wrap up, do you plan on continuing to track this case with Father Antonio out on bond and continuing to lead Mass here in Fresno?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there was so much in this story that we weren't able to include. Yeah, there were people who I did make contact with who did not feel comfortable for one reason or another telling their stories, people who did not want to come forward, people who said that they were abused by Father Antonio, but who did not want to be listed as alleged victims in this case. His last court date was on June 18th, and the judge agreed to push off scheduling the trial because of, you know, the availability of the attorneys involved in the case and because of the coronavirus pandemic and the court's limited ability to hold a trial with this public health emergency. But the next court date is on August 13th. There's also a lawsuit that's making its way through the courts, and several plaintiffs are suing not only Father Antonio, but the Anglican Diocese of San Joaquin, alleging that Father Antonio sexually assaulted them, that the priest and the church violated their trust, and that the church was negligent in hiring and supervising Castaneda, resulting in infliction of emotional distress. So I plan to follow any developments in the criminal case and also any civil litigation that comes out as a result of what allegedly happened here.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for sharing this story with our listeners and for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.